Welcome to episode 4 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. It's a bonus episode this week. We're on the Pictureless Podcast Network, and it's Randy Wilkins, as always, and I'm joined by beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's Masters week. I'm a big golf fan, so just been watching the Masters this morning. Doing well, seeing the O.J. Simpson, all the social media posts about his death. we don't have to get into O.J. the person, but yeah, it's an exciting Thursday afternoon on online.
You don't want to break down and discuss the cultural impact of one Orenthal James Simpson. You don't want to do that on the Views from 314 Feet podcast.
Maybe if you were working for TMZ, I think it would be definitely be a worthy subject. But we're here to talk about Yankees.
Yeah, it'd be great if this was a podcast about social media, because then we could probably talk about this for 10 hours. Just the
oh my god, yeah,
maybe more. We could just do like a marathon on O.J. Simpson tweets and posts throughout the day.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, the ESPN documentary, if I'm remembering correctly, was like 10 hours.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
or,
I mean,
it was either five, or I think it was 10 because it was 2 hour. It was 5 2-hour episodes.
Right. So, yeah, we can go for days on that subject alone.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll leave that one alone. We'll do that on our social media analysis podcast that is yet to be titled. But with golf, do you play golf or you just watch golf?
I play golf. I'm not good at it. I've been playing for like 11 years now.
Oh, okay.
Still haven't figured it out. and now living in New York City, it's really difficult to get around. I don't have a car anymore.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of the guys on the beat play golf. So we've gone out a couple times, Max Goodman with NJ.com and Pete Caldera with the Bergen Record.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice to golf more, just hard, like in season now, you know, now that the weather is like getting better, like it would be great to go out. It's just difficult to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I am not a golfer. I took a couple lessons. I'm horrible.
It's hard.
Yeah. It's super hard. I played baseball and softball my entire life. Like, I have no problem with that. I can still hit a fastball, no problem. And then you get to the driving range, and I can't even get the ball in the air, like, with any consistency. It's like I'm hitting Giancarlo Stanton ground balls into like, the next, like, pod or whatever it's called, like, right next to me. I'm terrible. But I'm determined to at least be competent enough so I can – go to the driving range and like drive a golf ball. Like, I have no, my bar is very low. I have very high expectations and standards for myself in everything except for my golf conquest. So I really just want to be able to go to a driving range and hit the ball in the air with consistency that goes more than 100 feet, let alone yards. If I could do that, then I'll be satisfied. So that's like my very low goal for myself with golf, and then I feel like I would have accomplished something.
Well, you should go to Topgolf. I don't know if you've been to Topgolf.
Never been there.
It's a lot of fun. I don't know where the closest one is here. I think there's one in New Jersey, but basically, like, you don't have to be good at golf to have a good time. Like, you can just go hang out, drink. You know, they got a bunch of TVs. It's like a big, it's a sports bar with golf, like,
right,
you know, attached to it essentially, but a lot of fun. Highly recommend Topgolf. Yeah. And if anyone from Topgolf is listening, you know, feel free to drop a sponsorship.
That's drop a sponsorship.
Free ad.
Right. Right. Drop it quickly. We would be greatly appreciative. All right. So it's Masters weekend. It's also another weekend for the Yankees. They're going to go to Cleveland. We'll have a quick Cleveland Guardians preview towards the end of the episode. But we decided to hop on and do another one just because we acknowledge and understand that because it's weekly, a lot of games pass by and we want to make sure that we're as up to date and giving as much insight as possible and trying to keep up with the schedule as much as we can. So we've heard you. We're here. We'll talk about the Marlins series and some things that we've noticed and some things that are beginning to look like trends early on that go beyond just the Marlins series, but the first however many games they've played, 13. Is that where we're at?
Yep.
So we'll get into that. We'll talk about, we won't obviously recap the Marlins games, but we'll just talk about what we've seen and some of those insights like we've been doing in the previous episodes. So with that said, it feels like at least today, one big topic of conversation. I understand why, just because of the situations that he was in with big opportunities to either win the game or give them a lead once they were down against the Marlins yesterday, Wednesday, is Aaron Judge. And since the beginning of the season, people have kind of expressed concern. There's always the, is he hurt question, because he had the ab thing at the end of spring training. So it all feels natural. It feels reasonable to ask these things or question it. I personally don't think there's an issue. I think he just missed some pitches and feels like in between in some at bats. That's like my very like quick analysis of what's going on. But you've seen him, you've been around him, you've been around the team, obviously. Do you think that there is some underlying issue? Do you think that there's an injury that he's like keeping away from people? What is your impression so far from what you can gather with Aaron Judge so far?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody's concerned about Judge. I don't think Judge is concerned. I don't think his teammates are concerned. I don't think the organization as a whole is concerned. And they don't really have anything to be concerned about right now. I mean, yes, like the raw numbers are not what you would expect out of Judge. You know, he has two homers, only six RBIs so far. But like when you look deeper at the metrics, like he's still hitting the ball hard. I'm looking now, he's in the 87th percentile in average exit velocity. He's still barreling the baseball. I don't think there's much to be concerned about right now. I mean, he's walking a ton. I think he leads MLB in walks so far. He's not expanding the strike zone, which I think is interesting with Judge, because, you know, over the past several years, that's definitely been something that he's been prone to do. He's in the 91st percentile in chase rate, which I think is, you know, very fascinating, just considering how large of a strike zone he has to begin with. But I don't really find any reason to be concerned. You know, his BABIP right now is 194. His career BABIP is 337. So, you know, when you look at those two numbers in particular, you can surmise that he's running into a lot of bad luck so far. You know, BABIP always figures itself out over the course of the season. So he's going to get good luck eventually. It's not just going to be a season of bad luck for Judge, not with as hard as he hits the ball. He makes a lot of contact, so it's really no concern right now with Judge. I get it. You know, he hasn't had any results, but I think it's fine. If anything, if you want to point to something, you know, I know Boone said in spring training he was mid-spring beat up. maybe that's lingered a little bit with the results, but, you know, he missed, I think it was 8 to 10 days of spring games where he wasn't, you know, seeing pitches. So, yeah, I mean, I think that could be a reason why he hasn't had the success that we've come to know. But still, just like looking at the deeper metrics, you know, I know sometimes people just look at, you know, he's hitting under 200, you know, send him down to AAA, get rid of him. Why is he making $40 million? It's really not that big of a deal right now. I'm not concerned.
Yeah, I'm not concerned in the slightest. I mean, I think it's just, in many ways, it's just baseball. I mean, he has a 367 on base percentage. He has a 127 WRC plus. He's still making an impact. I know that a couple of people talked about the last two games just because of the situations, but if you went to like the last seven games, his OPS is like over 1,000. I mean, it's just this just feels somewhat like some of it's like small sample size theater. Some of it is when the at bats and the type of at bats he's having, like last night when he could have won the game essentially. And I think if he was really producing at the level that we are accustomed to, he would have come through. It's just, he just didn't, you know, he's not like in one of those like real big hot stretches, but he's being productive. And I think the big thing for me is the one that you pointed out with the chase rate. It's just really impressive that he's not pressing. He's not doing more than he thinks he needs to do. I think it's a reflection of the overall philosophy and approach of this team overall so far. And I'm curious, as you were speaking, something popped up in my head, and I don't really have any evidence for this. I don't know if there's like any data. I'm sure there is. We'd have to like kind of dig into it a little bit. But I do find it interesting, and I think it's something that I've noticed. I don't know if it was yesterday or the game before. Pitchers are still super careful with Judge as compared to Soto. Like, it feels like at times they're kind of pitching around Soto or they're being careful with Soto. But I think they're going after him. He has such a great eye that he can discern a ball from a strike, like at a super elite level. But I don't necessarily think that they're consciously like pitching around him. There's still at bats where I feel like some pitchers don't want any part of Judge, and they'll just walk him and like let him get on base and go after Rizzo. Now, part of it might just be because Rizzo's not hitting well, and Judge doesn't have as much protection at the moment, and we'll get into Rizzo in a second. But it feels like just from the eye test that pitchers are still super conscious of Aaron Judge, even though he's not hitting like a home run a game. But I remember one or two at bats in the Marlins series where it was obvious that they were like, I don't want any part of you. You can just go to first base. Like, this is an intentional walk. And to his credit, I guess because of 2022, he knows when somebody's not really trying to challenge him, and he's taking his walks and he's passing the baton. So all those things just feel like good signs. He doesn't seem hurt. He's playing center, he's playing it fine. Like, it just feels like he's not slugging yet. And that feels like the only thing that's not there at the moment.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. When you were talking, I looked it up and you are right. So far Judge is seeing 37.2% of pitches inside the strike zone this season, and that's down from 40.1% last year. So yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like they're being cautious with him. And like you said, I think that could also be something that, you know, Stanton is still, you know, coming off of two bad seasons, right? Probably would rather take their chances with Stanton. Rizzo, who we're going to talk about in a second, not playing well at all. So, yeah, I mean, like, I think if I was an opposing pitcher and I have to deal with either Judge or Stanton or Rizzo, I'd rather take my chances with those two guys than Judge, who is the best slugger in Major League Baseball. Even though he doesn't have the numbers right now, he is still Aaron Judge.
Right. Yeah, and I feel very confident saying, I don't know when, I'm not going to like play the prediction game in that sense, but there's going to be a time when Aaron Judge just goes off and then everything numbers related shoots through the roof, and then that'll be his baseline for the rest of the year. I mean, I understand why people talk about him, and I think that it's not necessarily from a place of contempt. I think they just want to see Aaron Judge go off because he's Aaron Judge and there's so much put on his shoulders. So I understand the conversations that people are having about him, but I have absolutely no concerns about him. He's going to be just fine. I mean, I think once he gets going and Soto is going at the same time, it's just going to be like an insane period of baseball for the Yankees. So neither one of us have concerns. But moving on to Anthony Rizzo, again, early. But there are some things where I think some questions can legitimately be raised about his performance. because it's not just like offensively. It just feels like overall he's playing in a slower gear than everybody else at the moment. So what are your impressions of Rizzo? Do you think that there's any real cause for concern? For me, it just looks like he's playing slower than everybody else just across the board. So yeah. What do you think of Rizzo?
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to talk about it statistically, I'm looking at it now. Last year, he was running 24.7 feet per second. This year, it's down to 23.3. So, like, yeah, he's, like, statistically moving slower. He's in the second percentile in sprint speed this year, which is
– oof.
That's awful. Awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's slower than Stanton.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean – It's not even just offense with Rizzo. I tweeted it last night, but like he's looked shaky in the field too.
Yeah.
You know, he bobbled the ball in Wednesday's game against Miami. Didn't come up with a scoop from Volpe, threw one like low in the dirt. It didn't look like it was that like challenging. It didn't look like it like ate him up. I think he just like dropped it. He had that ball in earlier in the series where it just went through his legs when Rodon was on the mound. He had that play in Arizona where he couldn't hold on to the ball with a tag. It just really strange stuff from Rizzo. You know, he was one of the better fielding first basemen last year, even when he was hurt. Like, he played well in the field. But this year, just very bizarre so far. He's yet to barrel a baseball, and he's always been someone who can square baseball up. Even last year, he was – let me see. Yeah, last year, he – not great. Obviously, he had the two-month stretch where he just couldn't hit at all. But even with that, he finished in the 35th percentile in barrel percentile. This year, he's yet to barrel up a baseball. He's not hitting the ball hard at all. I don't know what's going on with Rizzo. I don't know if there's any after effects with the concussion. I'm not going to speculate on that. They probably wouldn't tell us anyway if that was the case. So there's really no reason to like say like that's the reason. It's just looking at it from a pure statistics standpoint, he's having a very strange season overall. Like we mentioned, he's not running well. He's getting slower. He was already slow. You know, he's getting up there in age, and that's never a good sign with a player who, you know, is on the wrong side of 30. When you're getting slower, you're starting to make, you know, mistakes that were routine. I don't know. It's definitely interesting. You know, unlike Judge, I definitely have concerns of just the state of Anthony Rizzo just because he's not hitting the ball hard. And that's something that if you are doing, you'll likely see good results, but you can't even say that with him right now.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even thinking about sprint speed. I was just talking about game speed. Like the defense, it just looks like he's a gear behind everybody. You know, you mentioned all the miscues, and on most of those plays, it just looks like the play is happening quicker than he is. Like even the Volpe throw last night where he couldn't make the pick, it just felt like he saw the ball late or something, or he got into position to make the pick later than you probably should so you can make the scoop. The tag thing, maybe that's just chance, you know, it's just bad luck, but like the ball that went by him or through his legs. I mean, it just feels like everybody's playing at like a 100 level speed and he's at 95. And I'm not talking about effort. It just means like just the game speed day in and day out. He just feels a tick behind it. And he definitely looks like he's behind it when he's batting. And I don't know if it's the thing about what we talked about with Stanton with high velocity and trying to sell out to catch up to that velocity. And he clearly is not hitting high velocity well at all, but he's not really hitting anything well. And it feels like he's a tick behind every pitch. Also, it just feels like he's fouling a lot of pitches off, whether they're kind of in a sweet spot in the hitting zone or more of a pitcher's pitch. It just feels like everything is in slow motion. And there were a couple at bats in the Marlins series where I know he struggles with high fastballs, but there were some fastballs that weren't terribly high and he just couldn't catch up to it. He just couldn't barrel anything up. And again, we don't want to speculate, so it's not worth really getting into. It just looks like he's just behind for whatever reason. And maybe it's just one of those things where you're starting off slow to start a season and things start to click and you get the timing down. But yeah, I agree. I think if there's anybody in this lineup right now, and that includes Stanton, that is bringing up concerning questions early in the year, it would be Anthony Rizzo, just because the overall game has been pretty subpar lately.
And the thing about it is, like, they don't have anybody else to, you know, pick up for him. Like, he's it. That's it. Like, he is their first baseman. I guess you can put Oswaldo there. Like, he's played a little bit at first base, but, you know, outside of him, like, DJ's, you know, obviously hurt and unavailable, but they kind of have to continue playing him and hope that he figures it out, just because of the fact that there's no one else who is available who can fill in at an adequate level. Like Cabrera's barely played there. He can do it, but, you know, he hasn't even looked that great at third base. Right. I think he's made 3 errors at third so far this season. So, yeah, I mean, they're kind of, you know, stuck and just waiting for DJ to come back. And, you know, I don't know when DJ is supposed to come back. He took batting practice on the field before Wednesday's game and took some grounders, did some light running, but, you know, he's still a little ways away from returning and giving Rizzo at least a little bit of a break at first base.
So there's a third person in this equation that I guess is for right now, even though the team's doing well and the lineup is doing enough. There's a third person in the lineup that is generating some questions at the moment, and that's Gleyber Torres. And I think for the majority of the early season, he obviously hasn't been productive, but he's been seeing pitches like Judge, like Soto. He's kind of fallen into that groove of having a lot of pitches per plate appearance. It hasn't really turned into much production. And I think over the last couple games, and we'll get into the lineup change in a second, it feels over the last couple of games, and again, it's only a couple of games, he's starting to fall into the Gleyber trap of like pulling everything or yanking out to hit that 10-run home run to get that production going that he hasn't had yet. And he's still like working at bats and I think doing the right thing to have a quality at bat. And just like Judge, he's just not getting the production yet. But have you been able to speak with Gleyber? Have you been able to get an impression from him on how he's feeling, where he's at? What does the team think? What have you seen from Gleyber so far?
Yeah, we haven't spoken to Gleyber in quite some time. I actually don't remember the last time we spoke with Gleyber. He hasn't been at his locker during the 1 hour that we have access to the clubhouse prior to games. So I don't know what he's feeling or how he's thinking. We actually asked Boone about Gleyber before Wednesday's game, which is when, you know, it was clear that he had been moved to sixth in the order after leading off every game. And Boone mentioned that he felt like Gleyber was pressing a little bit, which, you know, it checks out with just what he's been doing, especially in the Marlins series in those first couple games. It looked like he was like trying to do everything, like you said, like trying to hit a 10-run homer to get out of it, and it just wasn't working for him. So it's possible that, you know, the pressure of leading off got to him. You know, just looking at where he's hit in the order throughout his career, leading off, and again, you only lead off once, but, you know, there's pressure there to produce for the guys behind you, even though you may lead off once a game. You know, he's hit the worst out of the leadoff spot in his career. I don't think it's a spot that he is comfortable with. I don't know if he would admit that himself, but the numbers show it's a pretty big drop off from first to even his second worst spot in the order. So I think that definitely played into some of his struggles, but yeah, like Rizzo, he's not hitting the ball very hard. You know, his barrel percentage is 2.5% right now. His hard hit rate, he's in the 10th percentile, not getting really good contact. I think what's encouraging for Gleyber is, you know, you mentioned like he has been seeing a lot of pitches per plate appearance, which is nice. He's not expanding the strike zone. He is walking. So he is doing some productive stuff at the plate, but you know, you would like to see better results. He's just not making quality contact right now. I mean, like a lesser version of like my concern with Judge. I mean, like I have no concern with Judge, but I do have a little bit concern with Gleyber. You know, he was really spectacular last year, but we haven't really seen anything out of him so far this season. You know, no slugging, just hasn't, you know, been getting extra base hits. Even when he's made, you know, contact, it's been kind of weak. So I think for him, you know, if he's able to get back to what he was doing last year, you know, he changed his approach a little bit with going to a toe tap approach to prioritize contact. You know, he still has that this year a little bit. But for him, if he's just making solid contact moving forward, I don't really have that much concern with him. But, you know, it has been a little disappointing just coming off of last year. And even for him himself, you know, maybe he has the thought of, you know, a payday coming for him. He's a free agent in the offseason. Sometimes you don't know how that affects players, because he is going to hit free agency at the end of the season. So I don't know where Gleyber's head is at right now, just because, again, like we haven't spoken to him in a while. But yeah, it's definitely it's been disappointing so far. He's been one of the more disappointing Yankees just coming off of where he was in 23.
So let me ask you a question, because you bring up something that I think it's interesting and maybe something that's kind of going under the radar, especially because there's so many people that always call for the Yankees in particular to be more contact conscious, and you know, they got to add more contact guys to balance out the lineup. And I'm not trying to downplay the importance of making like quality contact, but I also think that drum is beat a little bit too hard and too much. And when you were speaking about Gleyber, I just quickly looked up some of the Yankees team numbers on the offensive side. And do you think that there's a little bit too much emphasis on working a count and putting the ball in play versus just slugging? Because they're 15th in slugging right now. They're not even slugging over 400 as a team. They're middle of the pack. They haven't hit that many home runs. And ultimately, they're a team that's built on patience, but they're also a team built on power. And it feels so far that there hasn't been a lot of power. And obviously, Judge is a big part of that. But also, they have other guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark, like Gleyber, like Rizzo. And that's not happening at the moment. And I'm curious if there's been a correction too far to the other end with an emphasis on working every count and grinding every at bat, which is great. I have no criticism of it. But at some point, you want to drive the ball. And right now, they're not doing that part of it. And I think that's ultimately whatever issues the offense is having, or the inconsistencies, I should say, is related to not driving the ball with any consistency so far.
Yeah, I think it's a great point by you. It's actually something that I'm going to note in a story coming out in The Athletic on Friday. So when you're listening to this podcast, but yeah, they're not hitting the ball hard. And again, hitting the ball hard, I know some fans who like despise analytics or think Dylan Lawson's approach of like hit strikes hard was like moronic, but and too simple, but it's true. Like if you hit the ball hard, good things tend to happen. And right now, as we speak, they're 16th in average exit velocity, which is kind of crazy to think about when you think about who they have in the lineup. You know, we're talking about Juan Soto, Gleyber Torres, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Anthony Rizzo, there's some power hitters in the lineup, and they're 16th, which is very bizarre. Even last year, when their offense stunk, they still were in the top five in exit velocity, which again is an important statistic to keep track of, because usually the teams that have the best exit velocities are the ones who have the best offenses. You know, if you look at 2023, the teams that had the best exit velocities, Atlanta, the Dodgers, the Rangers, the Phillies, like those teams had really good offenses, and they eventually advanced to the playoffs. Obviously, there were a lot of things that were outside of the Yankees, out of their control. But so far, it's just weird because like they've been healthy. Like they don't have DJ LeMay, okay, but they have a bunch of other guys. So it's definitely interesting. I noticed that in Arizona, because even though they were winning and everything was good, like the offense wasn't like that impressive, honestly. Like they were working counts, sure. I do think that's a little bit overrated. You don't win games because you work counts. Like that could help for sure, chasing starters. But that was a good strategy like back in the day, like when we were growing up. Like now,
right,
you chase the starter, and the starter goes five innings. Guess what? You have like six guys in the bullpen who are throwing like 100 miles an hour, or they have like one pitch that is just like unhittable. They have a slider that moves like 25 inches.
Right.
So it's like, it's not that great of a thing to, be patient. You work your count, whatever, get walks like that. That is like nice and stuff. But the way you win games, especially offensively, is hitting home runs, because it's hard to score. Pitching's really good, and you win games because you hit, two-run homers, three-run homers, grand slams when that happens. Like, that's how you win games. So it is definitely interesting to see the approach that the Yankees have had offensively, because I don't know if it's something that, they're preaching behind the scenes of, let's prioritize contact, let's get singles, let's move the runner over, let's bunt. They're not bunting, but just to make my point, it is interesting though, just seeing the approach that they've had so far through 13 games.
I'm sure someone will listen to this and yell at their phone or computer or headphones hearing that home runs win games, but that is absolutely the truth, and the Yankees need to do a little bit more of it to have a more impactful offense. So we hit up the lineup. We hit up some players in the lineup. After the break, we'll talk a little bit about the pitching. We'll be back after this break. Welcome back to the Views from 314 Feet podcast on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. It's Randy. It's Chris. Bonus episode. Hopefully we can get some more weeks in where we have two episodes a week, but we will see. Chris has a crazy schedule following the team, so we got to go off of that. But we're here. So one person that we wanted to talk about on the pitching side is Carlos Rodon, who it feels like is turning a corner in his Yankees career. Obviously, last year was a disaster. This year has gotten off to a much better start. He's obviously healthy. He's been able to make all of his starts. He's been pretty good, I would say. He's definitely been better than what he was last year. And you wrote a piece, Chris, on Carlos after his start on Tuesday. Can you tell us a little bit about that, what you found out, and what was in that piece?
Yeah, I mean, so for Carlos's career, he's primarily been a two-pitch pitcher, fastball, slider. I know there was a lot made out last year about like, he can't have success as a two-pitch pitcher. It doesn't work. He needs to develop a third pitch. I mean, I would push back on that some. You can be successful and be a two-pitch pitcher. Spencer Strider is one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, and he really only throws fastball, slider. That changed a little bit, I believe, this season before he got hurt. But you can definitely be successful throwing two pitches. For Carlos, though, you know, coming into the season, he felt that, you know, just with where he pitches, he pitches in Yankee Stadium for a majority of his starts. He's coming from a team in San Francisco where Oracle Park, it's a hard place to hit the ball. And he feasted on throwing fastballs away from righties, up and away from righties. And, you know, they can poke it to right field and it's not going to go. It's not going to leave the park. If he throws a fastball to righties in Yankee Stadium and they poke it to right field, yeah, it's probably going to be a home run. So that's a big difference for Carlos moving from San Francisco to New York. So he's in spring training, he worked on developing a cutter. A cutter helps a left-handed pitcher. If they throw that pitch and it gets inside on righty's hands, they're likely going to have weak contact on the ground. You know, being a fly ball pitcher in New York, it's, I mean, you can make it work for sure, but it's way better if you're a ground ball pitcher. He's not going to become a predominantly ground ball pitcher, but, you know, having that in his arsenal could definitely lead to better results for him. He worked in his cutter and changeup specifically against the Marlins, more than he's ever had in any of his starts. It ended up being his best start as a Yankee so far. I think what we've seen with Carlos has been encouraging. You know, I think regression is coming, though. You know, he has a 1.72 ERA right now. His FIP is 4.55, which means that, you know, the results that he's gotten so far have been good, but, you know, I don't think the deeper analytics love with what they've seen so far from Carlos. You know, he hasn't been striking out guys that much. He ranks in the 33rd percentile in strikeout percentage, which is interesting when you look at what he was with San Francisco. Both those years in San Francisco, with San Francisco, 95th percentile in strikeout percentage, 96th percentile in strikeout percentage. He just hasn't been a strikeout pitcher with the Yankees. And that's not really that great of a sign for Carlos, especially when you look at him for the next 4 years that he's under contract. I don't know how well he's going to age if he's not striking out pitchers. I mean, striking out hitters. So that's definitely something to note. And like I said, the deeper metrics would suggest that regression is coming for Carlos. Obviously, if you're a Yankees fan, you hope that comes, you know, when Gerrit Cole is back. So, you know, there's one more pitcher in the starting rotation who can cover for that. But right now, from what he was last year, it has been a positive trend to have Carlos do what he's been doing in his first three starts.
Yeah, I mean, not only is he down on strikeouts, he's down on whiffs. I mean, he's not getting a bunch of swing and miss either on these pitches, which is, it's interesting. I mean, we talked a little bit about this before we recorded, but much like on the hitting side, where it feels like there's been an emphasis on contact and patience at the plate and pitches per appearance and grinding at bats, which again is not a bad thing, but it needs to be coupled with power. I think in some instances, it feels like the Yankees are trying to pitch more to contact a little bit more, just up and down. That could be off. That could be like a misread on my part, but just looking at Rodon's numbers, he definitely isn't getting swing and miss on a lot of his pitches. And it's interesting that you bring up the cutter, because I was on pitcher lists before we got on here. And if you have pitcher lists plus their premium option, which I suggest you all get if you're into that type of thing, they offer PLV, which is pitch level value, and like really detailed, really great breakdown. And this is similar to Pitching Plus. So if you know Saris's Pitching Plus, this is Pitcherless's version of that. And it's on a 0 to 10 scale. So people know 0 to 10, 5 generally is like the average. Above that is great. Below that, not so great. And I was looking at the profiles of Carlos's pitches, and it's interesting because his fastball is actually better last year than it's been so far this year. And his slider is better this year than it was last year. But the thing that it feels like is kind of balancing the two things out and is giving him success so far is the cutter. And he basically didn't throw a cutter, as we know, before, and introducing that has, I think, has made an impact, because I think if you take the cutter away, he probably isn't pitching as well, you know, because it just feels like he's not getting swing and miss on any of his pitches, really. And the profile of his fastball is dipping a little bit. Part of that's velocity. Part of that's the break, et cetera, et cetera. You can, like, go down that rabbit hole if you like. But according to PLV, the cutter is kind of making the difference. And it's not like a totally above average pitch yet, but it's doing well enough for him to kind of neutralize righties especially. So as the season goes on, I'm curious if the fastball performs better. And if it doesn't, I wonder if the cutter will keep getting better and becomes that like really legitimate third pitch for him to kind of offset whatever dipping quality he has with the fastball, because it also feels like he's not locating the fastball where he wants to all the time, just by the eye test. I'm not going by anything that I've like looked up. But I'm curious if his cutter can get better the more comfortable he is with it and kind of couples with that fastball to help him kind of address the things that you're talking about, just in terms of like FIP and what the metrics are saying underneath all of the results that he's getting.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. He's actually given up 0 hits against his cutter. So far this season, opposing hitters are hitting 286 against his fastball and 333 against his slider. So not necessarily great numbers. I will be interested to see, as teams get more film on his cutter, because obviously everybody adjusts. You know, right. You get more film on a guy, because he hasn't thrown this before this season. So it's a new pitch. He hasn't thrown it a lot. So I am interested to see over the course of the season if he's still going to have good results against his cutter as teams get more film on it. They can understand how it moves. They can understand how it looks paired with the fastball and his slider. So that's something to note as well with Carlos's cutter. You know, even though he is getting good results so far, it is important to note that it is a new pitch and teams are still learning how it plays.
Yeah, I wonder if that's when the changeup pops up more, because I don't know if it was last year or the year before, maybe it was last year, Gerrit Cole, there was a stretch where he threw a lot of cutters or he threw a lot of changeups and it was working, and then people started catching up to it, and then he went to the cutter and the cutter just kind of like made this huge difference for him. I don't know if I have like the sequencing right.
Yeah, the cutter made a huge difference for him in the second half of last season.
Right. Okay, so I had it right the second time, I guess, that I remember him throwing a lot of changeups early in the season, and I was like, oh, that changeup's nice. It's going to be filthy with it. And then it wasn't working, and then the cutter popped up, and then it was just like, Gerrit Cole's going to win the Cy Young, basically. You know what I mean? It was just like the race is over as long as he stays healthy. And I'm curious if Carlos kind of has a similar trajectory, because his changeup is performing a little bit better than his cutter now that I'm looking at it. He just doesn't throw it as much. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if what you said comes to fruition in terms of people adjusting to the cutter. I wonder if he starts bringing out the changeup a little bit more, because while I agree that you don't necessarily need like 4, 5, 6 pitches to navigate lineups and be successful, I think Rodon does. I think 4-seamer slider in the AL East isn't going to like really cut it, just because some balls are just going to accidentally go over the fence if somebody makes good contact, just with the stadiums that they play in and the teams that they play. So I'm curious if there is something for Carlos to lean on, if people do start adjusting to the cutter, and if that will be the changeup moving forward.
The changeup looked nasty against the Marlins.
Yeah.
There was I think it was the first inning, he struck out Josh Bell. I think he used cutter, changeup only. And if he can locate those pitches where he wants, I think he'll have success. Last year, he just couldn't locate anything, and that led to him being awful. So for Carlos, even though his he's not registering swing and miss, if he can just be a pitcher and just locate his pitches, I do think his stuff is good enough to be successful. It's just a matter of commanding his pitches, which he wasn't able to do last year. And so far he has been able to command his pitchers much better than what he did last season. And that's partly why he's had success so far. So I am interested to see if he's able to carry that over moving forward. Because, you know, like we just mentioned, the lack of swing and miss is definitely something to be aware of, especially for a starting pitcher, because you want guys who strike out opposing hitters. Because if you're inviting contact and you don't have Gerrit Cole command, you're inviting trouble. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens moving forward, because it's only been three starts.
So let's talk about the pitching staff as a whole, because it seems that there isn't a straight strikeout guy on their staff right now. I mean, it just feels like once Gerrit Cole was sidelined, they haven't really found a guy either in the bullpen or in the rotation that you can rely on to get a strikeout with any type of consistency. I know the bullpen, they don't have strikeout guys right now. It's a lot of contact guys. I think they're guys that have the stuff to do it. They're just not getting the strikeouts, but it's just an observation that I've kind of come across since we've been paying attention to the games. I don't know who the strikeout guy is on the staff right now. Do you know who that is?
I can't name one. I mean, I think Nick Birdy could be that out of the bullpen. His stuff is nasty. Luis Gil, just based off his stuff, is nasty. He does have problems commanding the ball. I don't think Luis knows where the ball's going most of the time. That's not a knock on him, because I think he's electric. But yeah, like, they don't have that guy right now who's the strikeout guy like Gerrit Cole is. And again, if you're not striking out hitters, it could lead to trouble, especially if your defense isn't crisp. And so far, the Yankees' defense has not been crisp. I think they're second right now in errors, total errors, behind Oakland. You never want to be anywhere close to Oakland in any statistic.
Very true.
And right now they are. It's definitely interesting that they just aren't striking guys out on the pitching side of the ball. Right now, the bullpen, they have a 5.92 K-9 ratio, which is last in baseball. And the gap between them and like the third and fourth worst K-9 ratios out of the bullpen, it's like over two. So they're just like not getting any strikeouts whatsoever, which is interesting, because you want guys, especially out of the bullpen, who come in, you know, it's second and third, one out, and you need a strikeout, or first and second, no outs, you'd like a strikeout. But I don't know who that guy is. Who can they call out of the bullpen to be like, all right, we need a strikeout here, and then, you know, let's get a double play and get out of this. I don't think they have that right now. I don't know if they have that even when everybody is healthy. Guys in the minor leagues, that player doesn't really exist right now, which is going to be very, very interesting to see if they upgrade at some point around the trade deadline to get someone who can register a couple strikeouts. Even in the starting rotation, they just don't have that right now. So yeah, it's it's something to note for sure in the early part of the season.
Chris, how is this team 10-3? All we've been doing is like pointing out.
Well, they've gotten a lot of timely hitting.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they're the worst team in the league. Like, they have flaws. Like, they're not perfect, even though they have the best record. You know, they should be good with the amount of talent they have.
Yeah.
So it may sound like we're knocking everybody, but you know, the goal of the Yankees every year is to win a title. And, you know, some of the flaws they have right now are definitely concerning when you talk about October baseball. But again, it's April right now. So, you know, there's still plenty of time to sort these issues out.
Yeah. And I think some of it is just performance related with some guys. I mean, I think the strikeout thing is something they're going to have to address at some point. And Cole will obviously, or hopefully, address some of that. And there's always a trade deadline. They could bring guys in and guys might eventually evolve into those roles, but they're banking wins even with all these things that are going on. So that's obviously a good sign and a sign of a good team. So we're going to head to break. And when we come back, we will wrap things up with a quick preview of the Cleveland Guardians series. And then we'll say goodbye. But for right now, we'll go to this break. And we're back. It's the Views on 314 Fees podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. I always mess that up. Nick always yells at me. It's Pitcher List, not Pitchers. Pitcher List Network, Podcast Network. It's Randy, it's Chris. And that was the smoothest way to come out of a break. So I just want to pat myself on the back for handling that the best way possible. But we're here. And the next series for the Yankees are on the road. It's a 6 or 7 game road trip. Do they have 4 games in Toronto or 3?
3.
Okay, so 6 game road trip. They're going to Cleveland and they're going to Toronto. This weekend they'll be playing the Guardians, who are playing very well. Their offense is much better than I think most people expected. They don't hit home runs. It's just a lot of runs by 1,000 cuts, it feels like. And Stephen Kwan is having a great start to his year. He's a really good baseball player, and he's one of their best players. And he's been hitting really well. Obviously, the Shane Bieber injury is a big blow to them. It's weird because I think when the Guardians come to mind, you think pitching first and offense second. But right now it feels a little bit more that it's offense first, pitching second. And it'll be an interesting series. I think it's going to be tough for the Yankees, actually. But what are your first impressions and thoughts for this Cleveland series?
I think it's going to be a good test for the guys in the starting rotation because, like you mentioned, their offense has been good. So Clark Schmidt gets the first game, then Luis Gil. And I'm very interested to see what Nestor does on Sunday in the series finale. I think this is a really good test coming off of his excellent performance against Miami. I know we talked, you know, last episode about how concerned we were just with what Nestor had done in his first two starts. He did what he was supposed to do against Miami. So I'm very interested to see what happens in that series finale on Sunday. But it hasn't even just been Stephen Kwan for the Guardians. Josh Naylor, who did the baby rocking motion against Cole in the playoffs, which was just weird. It was just like the timing. Yeah,
super weird.
Yeah, it's like whatever.
Terrible.
But yeah, he's been going off. He's been one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball. Andrés Giménez has been really good for them. But for the Guardians, one of the biggest reasons why they've been so good this season is their bullpen. Their bullpen's been electric. They've been lights out. So it's going to be a good test for the Yankees offense, just coming off of a series against Miami where Miami's pitching is bad. Everything is bad with Miami. So it's another good measuring stick for where the Yankees are right now in the early part of the season. Very curious to see what happens. I'm also just very curious, like we were just talking about with the pitching. If they can shut down this Cleveland team that's been as hot as anybody, I think that's an encouraging sign just for the state of the New York Yankees pitching staff.
Yeah, and I'm going to look to the offense just to see how they perform against the Guardians starting rotation. They're facing Cookie Carrasco, then Tristan McKenzie, and then I believe it is LT Allen, who I know absolutely nothing about, to be totally honest. I can't help you there. Yeah, LT Allen, when I saw that, that's the first time I've ever heard of LT Allen. So no idea how that start will go that he's matched up against Nestor on Sunday. But I think that there's an opportunity for the Yankees offense to get going against the starting rotation. And I'm a big fan of Tristan McKenzie. I think he's had one good start and then one kind of not so great start so far. He pitched well against them before he got hurt last year. He was really good against them. I remember that start. And he'll be a nice test, but I think there's an opportunity for the Yankees to do some damage early on before Cleveland gets to that bullpen. It's just, can they put up enough runs to kind of keep up with this new Guardians offense? So yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be a nice test. I think it's in kind of an underappreciated test. I know that they have a good record, but I think if we went into the season, the Guardians wouldn't be necessarily at the top of the list of people that you would think in early April would be a nice measuring stick for the Yankees to measure themselves against. So this is a nice surprise, and I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be a really good series, but I also think these games are going to be tough for the Yankees. This isn't going to be like the Miami series in any form or fashion. And then also they have Jose Ramirez, who is a known Yankee killer and someone that they're going to have to account for in every single at bat. And I think you mentioned the Yankees pitching, and we talked about the lack of strikeouts. I'm not sure if this is a great matchup series-wise for the Yankees pitching, just because they haven't been able to get strikeouts, and the Guardians, as an offensive profile, their thing is making contact and getting on base and being aggressive on base. And to that point, the Yankees catchers have not done well against the running game so far. Jose Trevino in the game yesterday did not have good throws. Austin Wells, obviously, that's not his strong suit as well. And I'm very curious to see how aggressive the Guardians will be once they get on base and how they try to take advantage of the Yankees on the base paths. Obviously, they'll be aggressive if a ball is in play, but also just stealing bases and kind of creating some chaos. I think that there's a avenue there for them to really take advantage of the Yankees. And again, that goes back to the Yankees really needing more strikeouts out of their pitching staff, so they're not in those situations. So it's a very interesting matchup for an early April series. And I think it's kind of fascinating to see how it's all going to play out.
No, that's a good point, especially with the running game. It's not something I considered, but yeah, they can run a bit on the bases. We probably don't have time to talk about Trevino now, but maybe in a future episode. But yeah, it's been a weird season for him. His arm is just, I don't know what's up with his arm. I was looking actually before we got on. He has the weakest arm right now in Major League Baseball from catchers. I don't know if that's wrist related. You know, he had surgery on it last year, like you mentioned. Austin Wells, that's not his strong suit. They could definitely take advantage of the Yankees on the base pass. I'm curious to see if that's going to be a major factor this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I hope everybody will tune in to the series if they can. Hopefully the Yankees will take that series as well and continue this great start to their season so far. So that'll wrap up this bonus episode, episode 4 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. We will have another recording on Monday and drop on Tuesday. We're available on all of your favorite podcast platforms. We're also on YouTube. Going to try to get some fancy graphics so it's not just these two boxes and our names on it, but we're working on it. I'm working on it. Figure something out for the YouTube crowd. So you can subscribe there as well. We'll have every episode on our YouTube channel as well. It's the same name as the podcast. Any last words, Chris?
No, I'm excited for to watch baseball this weekend and the Masters. That's it.
Yeah. Well, enjoy the Masters. And there's breaking news. I'm sure everybody will know about this before they listen to this. But eBay bank fraud charges for $16 million with Ohtani.
That is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. I think I got that right. I was just glancing at it as we were talking. So I believe it's $16 million. So that story continues to go on. It's not Yankees related, but it's baseball related. So I felt like it was my responsibility to tell you something that you'll know about by the time that you listen to it. But we're doing it anyway. So we hope that you guys have a great day, a great weekend. Enjoy the games. We will be back on Monday. And the podcast will drop on Tuesday. The YouTube video will drop on Monday. Have a great weekend, and we will speak to you next week.